So we'll move to our last case, Collins v. Village of Palatine. Mr. Murphy.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Palatine asked the District Court to do one thing. That was dismiss Michael Collins' complaint based on the statute of limitations. What the District Court
did... You want to raise that up a little bit? No, you don't have to raise that. If you reach underneath there, there's a little button on the other side.
Okay.
And if you push it, the thing will raise magically. And if you're pushing the right button...
Pushing the button, maybe it's this one.
We haven't had an electric fader, have we, lad?
Not if that works, sir. Any better?
Pushing the button up, but it doesn't do anything.
This is the maximum, I think.
Tough as high as it goes?
Yes, unfortunately.
Then lean into it, my friend. You're a big man.
All right. Good morning, Honors. Martin Murphy. The Palatine asked the district court judge to do one thing, and that was to dismiss Michael Collins' complaint based on the statute of limitations. What the district court did was it dismissed Michael Collins' complaint based on the statute of limitations. It dismissed the putative class's claims without any stating any reasons why. And after it had ordered, it said it was going to stay any decision on the motion for class certification. It ruled on it anyway. Palatine had asked the court to either strike the motion for class certification without prejudice to be filed later because they didn't want the court ruling on class certification until after it ruled on its statute of limitations argument, or alternatively to just stay it and decide the merits of the statute of limitations argument first. So the court obliged and entered an order and basically halted any briefing on the motion for class certification, and just wanted to rule on the one motion, but then its order, of course, knocked out everything. It knocked out the class claims, it knocked out the motion for class certification without stating any reason why or any Rule 23 analysis, and then the tolling issue. Now, on the tolling issue that he knocked out Collins' complaint on, that's also erroneous. The district court has never ruled, this is, of course, a continuation of the Senne case, Senne versus Village of Palatine. Senne filed the class action. The district court, within 3 weeks, dismissed the complaint, saying it didn't state a cause of action. The case came up. A panel
When the Supreme Court denied cert, wasn't that the end of that litigation?
That was the end of it for Senne, but not everybody else, because the court had only entered summary judgment against Senne.
But then you don't ever have... Then tolling never ends.
Well, it ends once you rule on class certification, you either deny it or grant it, but the court keeps putting off. In Senne, we had argued, we'd briefed, argued, the court took the motion for class certification under advisement, and then told Palatine, why don't you file a motion for summary judgment against Senne? They did that, and then the court then entered summary judgment against Senne, and then said, oh yeah, the motion for class certification is terminated as moot. Well, it's not moot, as this court said in Weissmuller. The motion isn't moot for class certification because, you know, the other plaintiff's claims aren't moot. You know, even if Senne couldn't press his claim under the court's reasoning, the other plaintiffs could certainly try to press their claim.
Is this just a repetition of the Senne case?
It's a continuation of the Senne case. Absolutely, it's a continuation of the Senne case.
But after the Supreme Court denied cert, it's still going on.
Well, what happened in Senne is the obviously after the en banc court entered its decision and said, okay, there are two things that have to happen for disclosure to be permitted. One, it has to be one of the listed disclosures, and two, all the information disclosed has to actually be used. The panel changed that, then the subsequent panel changed that and said, no, it doesn't actually have to be used. They just have to have a reason, basically state a permitted purpose for disclosing the information. But that changed everything because that wasn't the standard that Palatine moved for summary judgment under. They moved under the en banc court's decision. If we go back in, the argument, of course, would be, yeah, the police chief listed all these reasons. We didn't fight him in the Senne case because it didn't matter because they didn't use the information in Senne's case. And we can go back and prove that actually what the police chief said was wrong. They don't use it for any of that information. They never have. We've got thousands of pages of documents that prove they've never used it for the reasons that he said they used it. So we can actually beat it, but we didn't fight that on the summary judgment because it wasn't pertinent to the issue. So I still think it's a very winnable case, and I don't think the statute of limitations runs on a case while it's still running. I mean, you file a case with 3 days left in the statute of limitations, and the district court rules against you, the statute doesn't run. You can still appeal. I mean, American Pipe, there was 3 days left when the parties sought to intervene. The judge said you can't intervene. The statute of limitations didn't run, you know, while they were on appeal. In the recent case of Ewald, Campbell Ewald versus Gomez, in that case, Gomez filed with a few months left on the statute of limitations. The court dismissed his complaint. He appealed, went to the Supreme Court. Now, that case would have been moot under Palatine's argument because the court didn't deny class certification. It didn't rule on the motion for class certification. So I think in order for the clock to start, the court has to at least rule on class certification and say, yes, this case may go forward as a class or it may not go forward as a class. But that, I think, is what starts the clock and not the dismissal of the complaint because it's still alive, as you'd said in Weissmuller. It's still the district court doesn't have the final word on whether a case goes forward or not. That's really, you know, the Court of Appeals can certainly reverse. So to say the statute of limitations, that this court has to rule within a day because there was only 1 day left in the statute, well, that's crazy. You wouldn't do that. And it would also be crazy for anybody to file a complaint after this court said, or the district court said, that the complaint didn't state a cause of action. Why would somebody come forward? It would just get dismissed based on the ruling in Sunny. So everybody had to kind of wait and see what happened with Sunny. And again, it was affirmed by a panel and then reversed on a bond. So, you know, nobody would follow then. And then the second part was, the judgment against Senny was only summary judgment against him. There was no discussion of the class. So that, again, the Senny decision may not even have been a final judgment to begin with because the court didn't rule on the class claims and it didn't rule on the motion for class certification. But I'm not arguing that. I'm really arguing just the tolling issue and whether or not there's tolling. And tolling begins once the clock had restart, either when the court declines to certify a class, then it can start, or under like the McDonald case now, there the court declined to certify a class. 3 years later, when the plaintiff wasn't going to appeal the denial of class certification, McDonald stepped forward. That was Roma Santo case, and then Roma Santo wasn't going to proceed on her appeal. So McDonald picked up and said, can I intervene for the purposes of taking an appeal? And this court said yes, and it reversed the class certification denial, and then the Supreme Court then affirmed this court's decision. So in that case, again, the statute of limitations would have run long before because the court had denied the motion for class certification in 1972. In 1975, the case was finally ended. So 3 years after the court declined to certify, 3 years later, she was then allowed to intervene. So I think the court clearly wrong on the tolling issue, and for that reason, I'd ask that the court reverse. So I'll just save the remainder of my time for rebuttal if there's any questions.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Lamley?
Correct. May it please the court, Brandon Lumley on behalf of the Appellee Village of Palatine. You know, the issues in this case are really well suited for a civil procedure casebook. I mean, we're dealing with issues that are clear, issues that have been well settled, and quite frankly, issues that really have no factual involvement. There's no variation based on the specific facts of the case. Under American Pipe, the rule in American Pipe, it's quite clear. The filing of a class complaint tolls the statute of limitations or pauses the statute of limitations for potential class members. But, you know, even American Pipe made clear that tolling does not last forever. In that case, the complaint was filed 11 days before the statute of limitations had run, and once the court declined to treat the case further as a class action, the Supreme Court was clear they had 11 days left to either intervene or file their own complaints. The claimants in that case sought to intervene. When the court denied them the opportunity to intervene, they appealed. Their motion to intervene, was the functional equivalent in that case of having filed a separate complaint. So the question here is quite simple. Does the statute of limitations resume when a class complaint is dismissed, or does it stay paused, tolled, until there's no possibility of a further appeal? We've exhaustively looked at the precedent in this case. Every circuit, including the Seventh Circuit, has already held that tolling stops and the statute of limitations resumes upon the dismissal of a class complaint, and that there is no tolling on appeal. Now, the In Re Copper antitrust litigation is the case that we could find in the Seventh Circuit that's most directly on point. You know, when I read some of my opponent's brief, I believe that there's some confusion as to which portion of that case we're citing because it was a consolidated appeal. The analysis that's at issue is entirely contained on page 793 of the opinion. And Judge Wood, writing on behalf of the unanimous panel of the case, held quite clearly that the issue was whether the statute of limitations resumed upon the dismissal with prejudice of the underlying class complaint, and held that it did, and further held that there was no entitlement to tolling during the subsequent appeal. Now, in this case, maybe we should just talk about the facts here. Mr. Collins received a parking ticket in 2007. So we're talking about a decade ago he gets a parking ticket. He didn't do anything. He had a four-year statute of limitations under the Driver's Privacy Protection Act, the DPPA. He didn't do anything with regards to that ticket for over 3 years. When he had 9 months left on the statute of limitations, another lawsuit was filed. This is the Cenny versus Village of Palatine case. So it is clear, and we are not disputing, in fact, we agree, under American Pipe, the filing of Cenny class complaint tolled or paused the statute of limitations for Mr. Collins. However, that tolling was extremely short-lived. Counsel says the district court judge dismissed that complaint within 3 weeks. It was actually 26 days, but functionally 3 weeks. At that point in time, under the applicable case law, the statute of limitations that applied to Mr. Collins' claim was no longer being told, was no longer paused. It was resumed. The fact that Mr. Cenny appealed did not change the statute of limitations analysis as for Mr. Collins. Now, the only way that Mr. Collins can avoid the statute of limitations, I mean, his statute of limitations, even accounting for tolling, expired in the summer of 2011. He filed this lawsuit in 2016. The only possible way he can claim that he is entitled and that his claim is not time barred is if he was able to take advantage of tolling from the moment that the Cenny complaint was filed until the moment that the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case in, I believe it was November of 2015. Mr. Collins has argued that he's entitled to take further advantage of tolling from the fact that Mr. Murphy had filed another class action on his own behalf. This is the Murphy versus the Village of Palatine case, because Mr. Murphy received an identical parking ticket in 2010. So, you know, short of having tolling from the beginning of Cenny to the end, there's simply no way that Mr. Collins' claim is going to pass on the statute of limitations. You know, some of the arguments that are being advanced by the appellant, I'm not sure that I fully understand the exact nature of them. For example, there's some arguments that are being raised with regards to mootness and whether or not a claim was moot on appeal. Now, as I understand the thrust of the argument, is he's arguing about the way the district court judge terminated a motion for class certification. And the district court judge in Cenny, when it granted summary judgment, said the motion for class certification is terminated as moot. Now, from that, Mr. Murphy has been arguing that there's some argument that all of the claims of the class members are moot, and he's attempting to compare his case to that of the Weiss-Mueller case, in which there we were dealing with the intervention of a class member on appeal due to the mootness of a claim on appeal. But really what we're talking about is the mootness of a motion, not the mootness of an individual's claim. The district court has never held that the claims of the class members themselves were moot by virtue of granting summary judgment. He simply held that their motion, that the motion for class certification was moot. Now, with regard, going back to the statute of limitations argument, this is not an issue for which there's much disagreement among the courts. We've looked at the courts. The Seventh Circuit has clearly held on at least 3 to 4 occasions that the dismissal of a class complaint ends the tolling benefit by under American Pipe. And in Re Copper Antitrust, Hemingway versus Peabody Coal, both of the Seventh Circuit, as well as courts from the 2nd, 3rd, 5th, 6th, 11th, and Federal Circuit, all hold that there is no tolling on a subsequent appeal once the statute of limitations continues. Simply stated, the law is clear, the facts are clear, this is a case that is easily decided and, as I said, is a prime candidate, perhaps, for a civil procedure casebook. With regard to the Romasanto-McDonald case that was argued, the McDonald versus United Airlines case, going back, where it stands for the proposition that a class member has leave to intervene to appeal the class certification denial within the 30 days after judgment. So, counsel has cited the Romasanto case, initially cited to that case for this proposition in his reply brief. If you look at the case and if you read the case, in footnote, I believe it's footnote 6 of that opinion, it makes it very clear that the court is not even applying the American Pipe analysis and says, we're relying on a different body of case law with regards to the tolling aspect. So, unless the court has any questions, for the reasons that we stated here, the reasons we stated in our brief, we ask that you affirm the decision below. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lemley. Mr. Murphy, anything further?
I would certainly challenge Mr. Lemley's argument that the courts have ruled that a dismissal the statute of limitations would resume on a dismissal. There isn't one case he cited that does that. In Re Copper, the court had, first of all, that was a decision whether a state case filed under state law tolls the statute of limitations for a subsequent federal case in federal court.
What's your view of when tolling ends?
I believe that tolling ends when the court says that this case cannot go forward as a class action, when it rules on a motion for class certification and says it can't go forward anymore. Otherwise, you stand in the shoes of the class representative. Otherwise, you've got people filing the economies, the promotion of efficiency and economies in litigation aren't met when you have people rushing to the court every time a district court makes a decision. I mean, this is the fourth time this case has been in this Court of Appeals. If every time that happened, you've got 1,000 people come in and file complaints saying, oh, I want to preserve my place in line here, I don't want this case to go away, well, then where's the promotion of economy and efficiencies? There isn't any. So, again, I challenge you to look for one case that he cited that supports his proposition where they hadn't already ruled on a motion for class certification, because it doesn't exist. I've looked for it. And the cases, as I said, in Re Copper, Crown Court Conceal, Sawyer versus Atlas, all those cases all say the same thing, which is basically the statute of limitations. When you decide to take a case and adjudicate it piecemeal, this is what's going to happen. You lose that preclusive effect that you want by attacking the case piecemeal. Palatine is vehemently opposed to the court even ruling on class certification. When I would think that it would want that, given the court's prior rulings, let's try to move this case along. And they're not doing that. They keep trying to stall it and then say, hey, this case shouldn't be stalled forever. Well, you're the reason it's stalled forever, Palatine. You're causing this delay because you're doing all these piecemeal. You're moving for summary judgment against one person. You're moving to dismiss one person. You're trying to attack everybody one plaintiff at a time instead of attacking the case head on. So, again, I would ask the court to do it. And also ask the court consider Rule 36.
Well, thank you very much to both counsel. And the court will be in recess.